It's Wednesday, July 30th, 2008, and it's 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Hey, Stashers, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here for today for our Hemp Day, Hump Day. Today, of course, was the big day out on Capitol Hill with Representative Barney Frank introducing his act to end federal penalties for adult personal marijuana use. That's right, H.R. 5843, if it were to pass, would end any sort of federal penalties for the personal possession of 100 grams of marijuana or less, and end any penalties for the nonprofit transfers of marijuana of 1 ounce or less. Alan St. Pierre, our executive director of Normal, was out there, along with Rob Campia from the Marijuana Policy Project and Bill Piper from the Drug Policy Alliance. So I've got plenty of audio coming up in our Hemp Headlines segment. Also, we've got our regular cannabis science for Wednesday. We'll be speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. This time we're going to be covering a really interesting study about teenagers and family mealtime, and how family mealtime may reduce the possibility of young girls trying marijuana, but not young boys. So stay tuned for that one. Also, part two of my interview with Kevin Hoover, the editor-publisher of the Arcata Eye in Arcata, California, on his interview with Scott Burns, the deputy drug czar. All that and our regular musical break too. So stick around, grab your favorite bong, load it up with some ice and some fine sensimilia. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Legislators aim to snuff out penalties for pot use. From CNN, the U.S. should stop arresting responsible marijuana users, Representative Barney Frank said Wednesday, announcing a proposal to end federal penalties for Americans carrying fewer than 100 grams, almost a quarter pound, of the substance. Current laws targeting marijuana users place undue burdens on law enforcement resources, punish ill Americans whose doctors have prescribed the substance, and unfairly affect African Americans, Frank said, flanked by legislators and representatives from advocacy groups. Frank said during a Capitol Hill news conference, quote, "The vast amount of human activity ought to be none of the government's business. I don't think it is the government's business to tell you how to spend your leisure time," end quote. Representatives William Lacey Clay, Democrat of Missouri, and Barbara Lee, Democrat of California, said that in addition to targeting nonviolent offenders, U.S. marijuana laws also unfairly target African Americans. Clay said he did not condone drug use, but he opposes using tax dollars to pursue what he feels is an arcane holdover from, quote, "a phony war on drugs that is filling up our prisons, especially with people of color," end quote. Too many drug enforcement resources are being dedicated to incarcerating nonviolent drug users and not enough being done to stop the trafficking of narcotics into the United States, he said. Frank said there were about a dozen states that already had okayed some degree of medical marijuana use, and the federal government should stop devoting resources to arresting people who are complying with their state's laws. In a shot at Republicans, Frank said it was strange that those who support limited government want to criminalize marijuana. If H.R. 5843 were passed by the House, marijuana smokers could possess up to 100 grams, about 3.5 ounces, of cannabis without being arrested. It would also permit the nonprofit transfer of up to 1 ounce of marijuana. The resolution would not affect laws forbidding the growing, importing, or exporting of marijuana, or selling it for profit. The resolution also would not affect any state laws regarding marijuana use. And here are some words from Representative Barney Frank at the news conference.
I don't think that it is the government's business to tell you how to spend your leisure time. Now, there are a lot of things that people do that I don't do. And I think they should be free to do them. There are things I do that other people don't do. And I want to be free to do them. This notion that we somehow have to either approve or criminalize all human activity is, as I said, a great misunderstanding of what's needed for a liberal, in the broad sense, government, a government in which people are free to do as they wish, unless they are damaging somebody else, or unless, in rare cases, you believe that they are so out of control that they can't be trusted to make their own judgments. I believe that smoking marijuana is an example of this. There are people who smoke marijuana to excess. There are people who drink to excess. There are people who do a number of other things to excess. We should deal with the excesses. Particularly, we should deal with any social behavior that occurs as a result of the excesses, but not lock people up or use scarce federal resources to arrest people for using or possessing for personal use marijuana. Now, if a state wants to use its legal resources for this, the state's free to do so. Although, as we know, there are, I think it's 11 or 12 states, 12 states that have voted to allow the use of marijuana for medical purposes with varying degrees of stringency in how they apply that. And in most of those cases, I believe it's been done by referendum. Only one, I think, was by the vote of the legislature, my neighbors in Rhode Island. So what we've had is, particularly under this administration, the spectacle of people who believe in limited government and states' rights sending federal law enforcement people in to prosecute people who have used medical marijuana in conformance with their own state's laws. This would end that. This would put an end to that practice. So that's what this bill is about. The legislation, as I said, removes federal penalties. If states choose to use their resources this way, they can. We're talking about imprisonment, and they say, well, not many people are affected by it. I never understood why people thought it was a defense of a law staying on the books, that it was rarely used.
Representative Frank was followed by Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of NORML, with these statements.
Good morning. My name is Alan St. Pierre, and I serve as the executive director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. For nearly four decades, NORML has provided a voice in the public policy debate for the tens of millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. We are the marijuana smokers lobby in America. We are here today to support H.R. 5843, which, if passed, would strip the federal government of its authority to arrest responsible adult cannabis consumers such as myself. NORML supports the elimination of all criminal and civil penalties for the personal use of marijuana, regardless of whether one is smoking marijuana for medical use or for personal pleasure. This policy is generally called decriminalization. We also support the right of consumers to cultivate marijuana for personal use. We further support the eventual establishment of a legally regulated market where marijuana smokers could buy their marijuana from a safe and secure environment. This model is generally called legalization. There is absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults, and this should be of no interest or concern to the government. It makes no sense to continue to treat nearly half of all Americans as criminals. Each year in this country, we arrest more and more of our citizens on marijuana charges. Last year, we arrested 830,000 Americans on marijuana charges, and 88% of those arrests were for personal possession and use, not trafficking. Since 1965, a total of nearly 20 million Americans, predominantly young people under the age of 30, have been arrested on marijuana charges. More than 11 million marijuana arrests just since 1990. Currently, 47% of all drug arrests in the country are for marijuana, and another marijuana smoker is arrested every 38 seconds. Numerous state and federally commissioned reports, including the 1972 report of the National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse, entitled Marijuana, a Signal of Misunderstanding, otherwise known as the Schaefer Commission, have concluded that the laws against marijuana cause far more harm than the use of the drug itself, and have recommended that we decriminalize marijuana and stop arresting responsible smokers. 12 states in America have adopted decriminalization as their marijuana policy. Currently in America, one out of three citizens live in a state or municipality that has already decriminalized the adult possession of marijuana. With alcohol, we acknowledge the distinction between use and abuse, and we focus our law enforcement involvement on efforts to stop irresponsible use. We do not arrest or jail responsible alcohol drinkers. That should be our policy with marijuana as well. As President Jimmy Carter said in a message to Congress in 1977, quote, penalties against drug use should not be more damaging to the individual than the use of the drug itself. Nowhere is this more clear than in the laws against the possession of marijuana in private for personal use. Unquote. H.R. 5843, as its name implies, is a bill to remove federal penalties for the personal use of marijuana by responsible adults. It is a sound proposal that would get the federal government out of the business of policing minor marijuana offenses altogether and leave the states free to experiment with new and innovative programs for regulating and controlling the responsible use of marijuana.
And let me remind everyone that Representative Barney Frank will be our special guest on the Daily Audio Stash interview this Friday, so stay tuned for that. Bush drug warrior crashes pot press conference from therawstory.com. On Wednesday, Representative Barney Frank, Democrat of Massachusetts, held a press conference to tout his pot decriminalization bill that even defenders admit has an almost non-existent chance of becoming law in the near future. Frank, however, found himself alongside the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy's chief scientist and two aides who were dispatched to provide instant rebuttal. Given the bill's chances of passage, Bush administration surrogate Dr. David Murray's impassioned arguments that seemed more appropriate in reefer madness were greeted with plenty of puzzled glances. Ross Story asked Murray, quote, why did the White House feel it was necessary to send at least three staffers to Capitol Hill to place in every reporter's hand a copy of its 20-page color-copied 2008 marijuana sourcebook, end quote. Dr. Murray said, quote, it is our responsibility to be aware of policy developments, end quote, explaining that Frank's attempt to modify the Controlled Substances Act was very much of interest to the Bush administration's pot prohibitionists. How pathetic are the government's pot prohibitionists? First of all, the chances that this bill will pass are slim to none right now. Second, even if the bill does move forward, it won't be heard until the next Congress, and this Dr. David Murray, appointed by George W. Bush, won't even be around anymore. Third, these minions of the drug czar are required by law to lie to the public about marijuana. Even if Jesus himself appeared at that press conference to say that cannabis is the sacred healing herb given by God to man and no man has the authority to deny it to another, the ONDCP would be required by law to say,
no, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
It is not.
It is.
You remember Dr. David Murray. He's the guy who testified to Congress in 2007 on medical marijuana, delivering these gems.
These modern-day snake oil proponents cite testimonials, not science, that smoked marijuana helps patients suffering from AIDS, cancer, and other painful diseases feel better.
Ah, the snake oil gambit, one of my favorites. That's the cousin to the why not smoke crack argument.
The Department of Health and Human Services, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the Office of National Drug Control Policy issued an advisory reinforcing the fact that no sound scientific studies have supported medical use of smoked marijuana for treatment in the United States.
Because the Department of Human Services refuses to allow anyone to study medical use of smoked marijuana.
The idea of telling suffering patients that the best we can do for them is to encourage them to inhale the hot smoke of a burning weed of unknown dose and purity seems medieval at best.
Yeah, and the idea of locking people up for doing so seems medieval, period.
Medical marijuana laws lead to drug-related violence. Since the first medical marijuana law passed in the United States, as many as 20 legal medical marijuana providers have been killed around the country, mostly in robberies.
If prohibition didn't jack up the price of a weed to palladium-like levels and prevent people from acquiring it cheaply and easily, there wouldn't be much incentive to rob a provider.
Our investment in medical science is at risk if we do not defend the proven process by which medicines are brought to the market and to patient-physician relationships. All drugs must undergo rigorous clinical trials before a drug can be released for public use. The responsibilities of the public health system are to ensure the safety, efficacy, and effectiveness of contemporary drugs.
You know, like the proven process that brought us Vioxx, Fen-Phen, Chantix, and so many other pharmaceuticals that have killed and harmed infinitely more people than marijuana. Rifle-toting DEA agents raid Orange County marijuana store. From the OC Register. A medical marijuana dispensary in the middle of a legal battle with the city of Orange was raided again by federal agents. Nature's Wellness Collective owner Bob Adams said the dispensary was raided by approximately 14 DEA agents armed with assault rifles and accompanied by members of the Orange Police Department just after 1 p.m. Tuesday. Adams said agents took all of his medicinal marijuana supply, money from the store's register and ATM machine, computers, cameras, smoking pipes, and his city-issued business license and detained him and his three employees. Nature's Wellness was first raided by agents from the Drug Enforcement Agency and Orange police officers in March. Adams said the latest raid was much of the same. Camus Day, another employee, spoke from his cell phone from a holding cell in Santa Ana. Quote, "They kicked in the door, smashed everything, handcuffed me, and threw me in the back of the car. They didn't read me my rights." End quote. Adams, Day, and the other employees were released after about 2 hours and said they were not charged. This is the continuing pattern with these DEA raids. They're little more than just a smash-and-grab robbery. Note that the feds never charged anyone in this case. This is becoming part of the pattern, too. Strange, you'd think with so many people involved in a conspiracy to cultivate and market hundreds of pounds of marijuana, there'd be an arrest or two, right? But that doesn't benefit the DEA. What they want to do in California is disrupt dispensary businesses and make photo ops. They get to seize all that cash, and they get to show piles of marijuana alongside cash and guns on the evening news. That's good PR for their psychological game to intimidate and terrorize the cannabis community and to try to convince others that medical marijuana is a sham and a front for mass criminal activity. If they make an arrest or two, however, now they have to spend the time and resources to present a case. The public is treated to a drawn-out spectacle of trials and appeals. That brings the case around to the issue of medical marijuana and real suffering patients, and the DEA then gets cast as the stormtroopers who would take a joint out of a cancer patient's trembling hands. The dispensary owners get cast as compassionate caregivers and become martyrs. That's bad PR for their psychological game. In other words, the DEA is a little like one of Polly Walnut's crews from The Sopranos. Hey, nice pot sop you got there, paisan. It'd be a shame if anything were to happen to it. Michigan man kills himself as police investigate marijuana plants at his home. Cassopolis, Michigan. A Cass County man apparently shot himself as police came to his door during a drug investigation Monday, authorities said. Nels Wilson, age 51, was found dead inside his mobile home after Michigan State Police approached his home to question him about marijuana plants found growing outside, according to a news release. Police had flown over Wilson's property as part of Operation Hemp, a joint venture of the Southwest Enforcement Team and State Police, and spotted more than 130 marijuana plants, including some 8 feet tall, near his trailer and garage, prosecutor Victor Fitz said. An officer heard a gunshot from inside the Jefferson Township residence, south of Cassopolis, as they approached, the news release said. They went inside to find Wilson was found dead with an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound, it said. 130 marijuana plants will get you up to 7 years in a Michigan prison and a $500,000 fine. If he was charged federally, and for more than 100 plants, that's likely, he's subject to 20 years mandatory minimum and $1 million. If his trailer is within 1,000 feet of a school, make that 40 years and $2 million. Rather than face life as a 50-year-old in prison, Nels Wilson became the latest victim of marijuana prohibition.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
Hey, Stashers, time for a brand new Pass the Stash contest. This one's going to run all the way through the end of July, so you've got till July 31st to get your entries in to stash@normal.org. Here's the contest, and it's inspired by conversation with a friend of mine, Scott, from Herb Age Designs. Check them out at herbagedesigns.com. And we were talking about what's the smallest amount you've ever heard of anyone being busted for marijuana, the smallest amount in possession. And Scott had quite a surprising answer. I'm not going to give it away yet because I want you guys to enter. So the person who can prove to me that they were busted with the smallest amount of marijuana in grams or less than a gram, just send me an email at stash@normal.org and you could win a copy of the DVD, a.k.a. Tommy Chong, the Josh Gilbert documentary that chronicles Tommy Chong's 9 months in prison that he served for selling bongs on the internet. If yours is the entry with the smallest amount and you can prove it by July 31st, you'll win the DVD. We'll just mail it right out to you. You can remain anonymous and you must be 18 or over to play. And thanks for playing Pass the Stash. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. Every Wednesday, we like to take a look at the latest cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. Dr. Earlywine, welcome back to the Stash.
Great to be on the show.
You sent me a great new study that I thought we should talk about. This one's quite interesting. You know, we're always taking a look at marijuana and teens, and of course, at Normal, we do not endorse the use of marijuana by anyone under the age of 18, except for, you know, medical purposes. And we're always looking for strategies for parents to be able to use to help their kids in this world where we have drugs like marijuana that they'll need to deal with. And this study was quite interesting because it had to do with the meal times in the family and how that might affect someone's marijuana use. Tell our listeners a little bit about this one.
This is a really hip new study that came out in the Journal of Adolescent Health, and the first author, Myla Eisenberg, is at University of Minnesota, And a lot of folks have heard about, oh, the family mealtime may be a buffer against a lot of bad things. And in correlational research all done at the same time, you do find that families that have meals together more often do seem to have kids with fewer negative consequences in a number of domains. But it was always done just at one time. Now, this is one of the first to have a long-term follow-up. And, in fact, they followed these kids up 5 years later and found that the ones who had at least five meals a week with their family were the ones who were much less likely to use not only cannabis but also the dreaded cigarettes and alcohol, which I was also really happy to see. The curious finding, though, was it only seemed to work for the girls. So the boys don't seem to have the same buffering effect from having a meal with the family. And we're still unclear about the mechanism exactly. And it looks like this may be partly, you know, mediated by just the idea that there's more family supervision here. Obviously, if you're spending more time with your kids, you've got an opportunity to hang out with them and an opportunity to watch what they're doing. But in my heart of hearts, I feel like that even more than that, you're just giving them an opportunity to engage in a lot of alternative behaviors. Although they weren't measured in this study, I think families that eat together, especially with their adolescent kids, the adolescent kids are more involved in making decisions about the food and actually participating in the meal, cooking, cleaning up, and things along those lines. So you're certainly filling that time with a behavior that's potentially incompatible with getting drunk, smoking cigarettes, or getting high. And I just feel like it's a really neat kind of thing that's relatively easy to add to anybody's daily life.
Yeah, the family mealtime, I think it's interesting, though, that they found this effect of the family mealtime for the females, but not for the young males. Any ideas on why this wouldn't affect young teenage boys?
I think, in fact, when I talk to my friends who have teenage boys, they say a family meal with a teenage boy is he comes in, basically inhales all the food there is in a minute and a half and is out the door. And so I think that the notion of family meal to the little boys when they first filled out these questionnaires and in adolescence doesn't mean the same thing to them. And I was actually thinking, well, what really is going on for them? And in fact, the same kind of buffers that they might be interested in that could encourage supervision are some of the alternative behaviors. So if they're having an opportunity to play sports with family members or to go camping, building stuff, little odd jobs around the house, and things where really they can just hang out at home and have a better connection with an adult, we are seeing nice buffers from just a nice relationship with even one adult seems to be make the difference between problem use and just experimentation with a number of drugs for the boys. And I feel like the outcome measures may be the other issue here, because experimentation with drugs is, in a sense, more normative for the boys. They're just more likely to give it a try. That this may have stacked the deck against the results for boys in this study.
Oh, okay. Now, you had mentioned earlier that there's been other studies taking a look at the family mealtime hour and how that might have better effects for adolescents. Was there this same male-female break in these other studies of adolescent behavior, or did it just happen with respect to drugs and alcohol?
It only worked for this drugs and alcohol study, and it may be in part depend upon what they measured in the other studies. So what a surprise, having family meals decreases consumption of fried food, increases the consumption of vegetables and fruits and things like that. We can see how that's not something that has the big gender difference the way drug and alcohol use does. So, of course, we wouldn't expect the gender differences on these outcomes. And the mechanism behind that is so clear. If you're eating at home with mom and dad and they're giving you vegetables and fruit, what a
sure.
surprise. You eat more of those and they're not sitting down to fried cheese sticks than you aren't either. And it's really, I think, a wonderful way to model healthy behaviors in your kids throughout. One question that has been coming up since this came out is just, well, how do I start doing this in my house if we haven't been doing it all along? And what I'm finding is to sit down and have a family meeting and say, okay, now we're going to have family meals together is an invitation to disaster. But sneaking the family meal in with, hey, by the way, I'm having your favorite and we're going to have this interesting dessert and, oh, afterwards we're all going to watch this DVD I rented that I think you're going to dig. You know, that kind of thing where you're actually appealing to the things that they would like rather than using this judicial decree, if you will, we're going to have it this way, but saying, here's an appealing thing I have to offer for you, and it turns into a fun family meal, and it's something that can become markedly more regular. The other confound, of course, is religiosity. So Jews who have Sabbath dinner, folks who grew up having a Sunday dinner as part of their religious traditions also have this as well. And we do see religiosity as a buffer against drug use and drug-related problems. But, again, we just don't know if that's a mechanism or not.
How about any other social types of problems, like getting involved with crime or mischief or anything like that? Was there any look at how the family meal might affect those kind of issues?
It does seem to have an impact on, first of all, early first sexual experience and high-risk sexual behavior, which, you know, kind of makes some sense. And as things like violence and problems at school also seem to be going on, and I feel like in that case it's often the opportunity to do a little problem solving with your parents and generate some options that you wouldn't have generated on your own. I know when I was an adolescent, pretty much the solution to everything may have been, oh, let's just go kick that guy in the shins. And in fact, by bouncing things around with an adult, you may come up with some better alternatives that actually lead to markedly better outcomes.
And those outcomes that we're talking about, again, didn't see a difference between males and females?
With the violence, which again, we anticipate some differences between boys and girls on the aggressive behavior, we did see some gender differences in some of those studies. But otherwise, no, it was a good buffer for the boys as well as the girls.
Wow, that's, I just find that really interesting that in almost every other measure, we find boys and girls reacting the same to the family dinner, except with respect to marijuana and tobacco and alcohol. It just seems very odd to me.
Well, I'm sure as both of our wives would attest, Russ, guys are kind of weird.
Guys are kind of weird. Well, that's good to look at. So we're going to recommend that to all of our families out there. You know, if you've got adolescents that, it's parents, and we've seen this in other instances too, that the amount of a parent's involvement in a kid's life is probably the number one thing that makes a difference as to whether they're going to move on to try drugs or alcohol. Is that a fair thing to say?
I think that's perfectly reasonable, but the other thing I just want to throw in is it's not just about preventing problems. In fact, you find out the more time you spend with your kids, they're actually delightful little people. They've got neat views on the world, fun things for us to learn from, and by all means, hanging out with them. And if you're not a parent, if you're an uncle or aunt or a neighbor and want to have an interesting meal, it's stunning how much you can learn just by sitting down with a grilled hamburger with the local team.
Mm. And the one last study that we're going to have to get someone to commission, Dr. Earlywine, is to see whether or not the family meal has any effect on boys pulling up their pants.
Looking forward to gathering those data myself.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash. We'll be back with you again next Wednesday for another dose of cannabis science.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org.
All right, time for our musical break on this Hemp Day Hump Day. And here on the Stash, we've got the Ginger Ninjas and their open-minded tune, Liberate Your Mind. The Ginger Ninjas are a progressive band with an amazing message. They spent the winter sustainable touring on bikes. Yes, a band with a message and a mission. To walk the walk, or in their case, bike the bike. They were on a 5,000-mile bike tour from California to the southern end of Mexico. No buses, no wagons, just human-powered bikes and a 1,000-watt human-powered PA system. They called it the Pleasant Revolution Tour. That's a wonderful title, and it makes me want to go on my own Pleasant Revolution Tour. Their music spans the genres of electronica and dancehall, hip-hop and funk. Visit their website to hear more great music and learn more about these forward-thinking artists at gingerninjas.com. An interesting note, they are playing at the Democratic National Convention in August and at the Republican National Convention in September. No doubt spreading their message of sustainability and bicycle love. If you'd like to find out more about these artists, the Ginger Ninjas, just check out our links at our blog, stash.normal.org, where you can also find a download for the MP3 of this song. It's the Ginger Ninjas with Liberate Your Mind.
Liberate your mind. I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
We continue now with part two of our interview with Kevin Hoover, the editor-publisher of the Arcata Eye newspaper in Arcata, California, right there in Humboldt County in the center of the Emerald Triangle. They were visited by Deputy Drug Czar Scott Burns, who is in town to comment on the issue of grow houses in Arcata and how they're becoming a problem in the city. Here's Kevin Hoover.
Well, I'd just like to say this. As much as the folks who, for whom this is simply a business are trying to conflate and associate themselves with the medical thing, I'd just simply like to say that I don't see anything wrong with recreational use of marijuana, and I never have. This is supposed to be the land of the free, right? Mm-hmm. What about self-determination? You know, I asked Scott that, and he had an answer. You got to read it for yourself, because I can't really represent it in any coherent way. But I simply don't understand. It just goes down to the most fundamental thing. What is their problem with this substance?
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. They're making it a big deal with their laws. I mean, that iterates out, Russ, in every way. That it's their problem that they're putting on us rather than any real problem. I just don't understand. They just seem to have some sort of, maybe they saw Reefer Madness or something and it just clung to their brain cells. I don't know what it is.
Well, you know, Upton.
But I mean, I'll just say this. When I left that room, I just sort of thought that, you know, we haven't moved along at all since the days of Reefer Madness.
Yeah.
You know, they still think that stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like the writer Upton Sinclair observed, you know, it's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on not understanding it. So I think that's kind of the situation we're in with this. And Scott Burns, this deputy drug czar who showed up there, I thought, you know, there was a couple of things, you know, he spewed a lot of the typical, drug czar talking points, the old, this ain't your father's Woodstock weed, you know, the pot today is, you know, so much more worse, and it's gonna eat your brain like meth or cocaine would or something like that, you know, crazy things. But there's a couple things that he said that I wanted to get your comments on here. One was he was almost like, I don't know if I want to call it taunting California, but he made this point about, you know, California, when Prop 215 was happening, said, no, feds, stay away, stay out, stay away. And now you're coming to us because you're having a grow house problem. See, I told you so. I mean, that's the theme I got from that. It seemed kind of cruel.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a, I don't want to say cheap, but rather inexpensive, let's just say, low-budget rhetorical point. It's like, nya, 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 nya. Problems crop up all the time, you know. And we, by the way, I don't know that we asked for federal help.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't recall that. So, yeah. You know, he's kind of presupposing that we called them in. We didn't. I didn't call this guy.
Yeah.
Everybody from the outside world that's come here has done so of their own volition. Now, why do I talk to them? I've been assailed as some sort of like neocon stooge for talking to this guy, even though I think it's fairly clear if you read the interview. I certainly challenged his,
oh, yeah,
his assumptions. But, and why did I talk to the LA Times, the New York Times? Why did I? Well, because they asked me. I mean, I'm in the news business. When I call people, I kind of like it. I wouldn't call them if I didn't expect them to talk to me, so I returned the courtesy. And although I even talked to Fox News, I just kind of wanted to see what they'd do. Actually, it wasn't as bad as I thought. They did make an effort. They actually talked to a grower and everything. Yeah, they had an agenda, and it was kind of crafted. But, it really wasn't as bad as it could have been. And it was just kind of fun to see them in action, too. But and I'll just say, that correspondent, she had the whitest teeth I have ever seen. This is a shade of white not seen in nature, by the account. She's a nice person, though. You got to believe, if you're in my profession, Russ, that the more exposure and discussion and information people have, the sooner we can advance this whole thing. I mean, I may or may not be right about that, but that's why I talk to these folks, and that's why I talk to Burns, too. And I think that the discussion that we had was somewhat expository. It does really tell where things are at with this particular administration, anyway.
Yeah, it'll definitely give you a good look into the mind of a prohibitionist here. I mean, when he's saying things like, so what if the patients say they feel better when they use medical marijuana? If they smoked crack and they felt better, would that be okay?
I don't want to personalize this against Scott. Personally, he's a nice guy and all that stuff, but, he is an agent for this fairly intolerant point of view. So rather than, objectify him as a bad person or whatever, I just kind of look at him as a representative of something. Who knows what he really thinks, too, by the way.
Right.
I mean, he was here, he saw this stuff. And what's he going to say? He's going to disagree with Bush, his boss? I don't think so. But anyway, with regard to the crack thing, look, I mean, you could, that little metaphor of his could carry over to some kid with a broken arm. I mean, if the kid's gonna get the arm set and a cast put on it, he's gonna feel better. Oh, why not just give him some crack?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't go, that one doesn't travel very far for me at all.
Yeah, I think you're right about, talking to these people and getting the truth out there. You know, the more we talk about this issue, the more obvious it becomes. Like you said earlier, it's not a big deal. We're making it a big deal, and it needs to stop.
Well, obviously, that works on a lot of levels, too. Not only are they jacking up the price, putting a lot of profit in it for a lot of people who really don't care about cannabis access, or it's just a commodity to them. Mm-hmm. They're just money making. Some of these people own 5, 6, 7 houses in Arcata. They've turned them all into little factories, much to the detriment of neighbors. I'd just like to say, with these grow houses, it's one thing for somebody to grow in their closet like I used to do, or if they're a 215 patient and they've got their little 10x10 space, that's nobody has an issue with that. It's when they turn the whole freaking house, they rewire it. We've had fires. These houses have caught on fire. Then we've had home invasion robberies with people duct taped up and tortured, And, I don't want to blow that out of proportion. It has happened a few times, but a lot of these grow houses are just, these people are not real friendly. They're not nice people. They have shotguns. They have heroin. They have big piles of cash. And, in these suburban neighborhoods at night, all the houses look the same. I mean, it's not impossible to speculate that sooner or later somebody's going to barge into the wrong house. These things have happened elsewhere, and this is not the Arcata that we are used to. We're used to a friendly little place where people can have their smoke and they can go buy their posters and their, their roach clips and stuff. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying it has to stay that way, but we don't like it when it turns into this kind of industrial fiasco with a lot of people fighting and the feds coming and,
Yeah, and all that profit, illegally or illegitimately jacked up by the prohibition of it. And like you say, they don't care about the marijuana. It could be marijuana if avocados got that kind of, or tomatoes, they'd be growing tomatoes. Whatever it is, they're just growing it because of the massive profit potential that's available through prohibition.
Yeah, absolutely.
And every time one of these guys, gets busted, and like you say, the evening news will come on with the big piles of cash and the heroin in the side and the big, and that gives a black eye to the legitimate Prop 215 people and the responsible, cannabis consumers out there that are, like you say, have a closet grow or something like that.
Exactly right. We had unfortunately, we had a homicide in town. It didn't happen in town, but a local person was arrested in connection with it. And apparently there was some sort of a marijuana deal associated with it. And, of course, people have already tried to leverage that as proving there's something wrong with marijuana. Well, who knows what happened? I mean, it was a guy and a girl, and I'm sure they also both had, Tylenol in their glove compartment, so maybe that was the Tylenol or whatever. Another point that Burns made is that, the old hoary old axiom about, marijuana is a gateway drug. Look, I mean, we all drank milk too, mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, the only gateway here is the gateway to the underground market where lots of things are sold. You know,
Indeed, absolutely.
I often say that nobody ever mentions, nobody ever thinks of Bacardi as a gateway drug because there's not piles of cocaine sitting next to Bacardi in the liquor store.
Right.
You know, you can't go from one to the other that way. It's the prohibition, again, that is the problem. And that's what we need to keep reminding everyone. And that's why I really love the interview. And I want to encourage everyone to check out the blog at stash.normal.org. We've got the links. The story is called Arcata Eyes Interview with Deputy Drug Czar Scott Burns, and I think you can also find it at the Humboldt State University website at
If you go to khsu.org, that's our local public radio station on the Humboldt State University campus, khsu.org, and go under archived shows. Yeah, there's that. You can download the MP3, listen on your iPod, whatever.
All right. Well, Kevin Hoover is the editor-publisher of the Arcata Eye, who interviewed Deputy Drug Czar Scott Burns in Arcata, California, the so-called Grow House Capital of America. How do you like that title, huh? That was something they had mentioned. This is another thing, too, is this, they're trying to, I think this is a new push by the ONDCP to set up another one of their type of propagandas here. We've seen in Florida is another state where they've been having some problems with the grow house industry, and the governor down there signed a bill that it created new higher criminal penalties for grow houses like this.
Well, I just want to stick up for Arcata just for 10 seconds here. Arcata is a wonderfully diverse community with a lot of other things that it should be recognized for. We have a sustainably managed community forest. We have a pioneering Arcata Marsh and Wildlife Sanctuary, which actually that's where all of our poop goes and it gets eaten by little microbes. And, we have wonderful farmers markets. We have a fantastically diverse culture of traditionalists and cutting-edge political things, environmental, very strong progressive movement, and all kinds of great media. And it's just a really great place. And then this thing comes in, you know, and it's sort of, we don't like being branded or tarred, I guess you'd say, with this. And, it's just... We have a good quality of life in Arcata, and somehow we're going to work our way through this.
Yeah, we've got to come up with a way, and part of that, I think, is just, again, ending this stupid prohibition so we can get sensible legislation and regulation of these industries. So
yeah, well, hopefully the leadership change in November will move things along.
Oh, we're all casting a lot of hope on that. And Kevin, thanks for joining us here on The Stash. You know, I got to get out to Arcata one of these days. I've been through the Redwood Forest a couple times, and I just love that area of the country, so we hope to be down there soon.
Well, we hope to see you, Russ.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
My pleasure.
All right. So I'll chop.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org, and you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from Eric Schlosser, the author, who wrote, quote, "Marijuana gives rise to insanity, not in its users, but in the policies directed against it. A nation that sentences the possessor of a single joint to life imprisonment without parole, but sets a murderer free after perhaps 6 years, is in the grips of a deep psychosis," end quote. Yeah, it's a little something we like to call reefer madness, and we want to thank Congressman Barney Frank for finally standing up against it and introducing H.R. 5843. Get to your phones, give Congress a call at 202-224-3121 and urge your congressman to co-sponsor or at least support H.R. 5843. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until that time,
Take care of each other, tokers.